Of course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on 4th and 1.
So, anyways, with that, time, George.
Welcome to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, no real surprise. It's a victory edition since the Chiefs were playing the winless, hapless, moribund Jets this week.
Used way too many fancy words there for me.
So I don't know if I mentioned this before on the podcast, but I know we've talked about it. I've got a bunch of cousins who live up in the Connecticut, New York area, and they're all Jets fans. So I, of course, was texting my cousin Sean during the game. And he's like, I don't know how Adam Gase still has a job. And I was like, part of me feels like he should have to suffer through all 16 games this season. I mean, he set the bed on fire. Don't give him a 2-month vacation. Make him sleep in the burning bed. Make every one of these 16 losses, I assume, they might pick off someone here or there, but make every one of these losses go on his permanent NFL head coaching record. And then jettison him after that.
What did I tell you on the previous podcast that Lee Fleissig taught me a long time ago?
Right.
Rich people NFL hate owners. To pay people not to work.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if they're doing a poor job. They hate to pay them not to work.
Right. And that's why I'm still employed. So, but anyway, hey, can we talk about that Patrick Mahomes guy? Because turns out he's still pretty good. Rumors that, Pat, wasn't being aggressive enough or concerns over this new Pat who was taking what the defense gave him and playing more complimentary football rather than balling out like he had to 2 years ago when the defense, quite frankly, wasn't good enough to stop anyone and he had to on a weekly basis. It turns out that guy still exists. 31 of 42, that's almost 75%, 416 yards. 5 touchdowns to 4 different receivers, completions to 10 receivers overall. Pat's still the best in the league, right?
My goodness. You're naming off all that stuff like it's his LinkedIn profile for special skills. Mahomes, he had a great game. Offense collectively had some hiccups here and there, and their run game was pretty much terrible for most of the day. So, a fourth quarter garbage time, I'm not including that. Whenever they had it popped off a couple runs of Darrell Williams. But, before that, the run game was awful. Just downright awful against the Jets. And it honestly shouldn't have been, but it was. Mahomes did what he had to do. They used my favorite play now, or my favorite audible Rolex, which apparently is just a vertical 9 route. Just, hey, Rolex, we're going to flash it.
I kind of love the fact that Andy has given Patrick Mahomes the freedom to just be like, if you don't like what you see or you see something you really like, just check out and chuck it deep.
So they're going to have to change the code name for it this week. Can't call it Rolex anymore. And then they can't call the underhand TD pass to Kelsey. You can't call that Stampede right now. Since Pat mentioned that in the press conference. Got to come up with a whole new name. So I'll be curious to see what they come up with next week.
Yeah. Well, at some point they might just say underhand no-look touchdown. And I'm not sure. Nobody stopped it yet. And they've put it on tape since, week 3? Maybe it just doesn't matter at this point. But Patrick Mahomes, the last 3 weeks has averaged over 8.7 yards an attempt. Okay. He's on pace for, the best completion percentage of his career at nearly 67%, 4,600 yards. He's got 21 touchdowns and only one interception halfway through the season. Can we put the narrative to bed though, after a game like this, that there's a problem with the Chiefs' deep passing game? I mean, it seems like when they need it, it's there. And Patrick talked about it in the post-game press conference. They're showing that they can win in a lot of different ways. Whether it was taking the underneath stuff and flexing in the run game against Houston, whether it was burying a team with the run game at Buffalo. Obviously, that wasn't working today. The Jets under Greg Williams have been pretty good against the run. So today it was, they hit him with the deep bomb to whoever they wanted to, whether it was Tyreek, DeMarcus, we also saw Mecole Hardman get involved. So, but can we put the narrative to bed that something is amiss with the deep passing game?
First off, I hate the word narrative. Can we just say opinion?
We can say whatever you want. So do I need to stop and we need to re-edit this?
Nope. We're going to keep it going so people can understand the rage in my heart for the word narrative. See? just crawls right under your skin. So obnoxious. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Just the rage in there right now. It's like Garrett Bowles all over again. the Chiefs, I like that the Chiefs have found multiple ways to win. I mean, last week, you know, they couldn't convert on third down, but they still found different phases of the game to be able to win. They had some good runs. They've evolved each and every week to where they're not getting it done the same way. So I enjoy that part of it, and I thought they've done a good job in that aspect to where there's no predictable way they're going to win each week. So in that regard, I've enjoyed seeing that part of it and seeing that evolution. I'm just kind of curious, at what point are we going to see them be able to put a complete game together? And I'm okay if it's the playoffs. I'm completely fine with that. I'm especially fine if it's Super Bowl, because it means they did enough to get there. It's just those are kind of the things you kind of wonder. Are you going to be able to get to that point to where you can really hit this thing and hit its peak at just the right time, like you did last year?
Yeah. What do you make of, I mentioned him earlier, you know, Mecole Hardman got the first touchdown of the game. This, I thought, was his most complete game in the offense. You know, we saw the big play early, but we saw him make plays in the second quarter and third quarter for once. 7 catches, 96 yards in that touchdown. Do you think handing over kickoff return duties to Byron Pringle has an impact there, and that maybe he's turning a corner too?
I'm not going to put all my eggs in the Mecole Hardman basket yet, because I think I'll be disappointed if I do. But it was a good start. I mean, like we talked about a couple other times in the past 2 years, it was a good start. Now build off of it and continue to build off of it. So he did build – technically, he did build off what he did in Denver and did it at a longer trajectory in this game. So, I mean, that's good. Now build off it again. Like, you have to every week. Like, this guy named Patrick Mahomes has had to do over 3 years. And that's how you become one of the greats in the league, is if you can continue to build off those performances and never be satisfied. I mean, they did a good job. The thing that I noticed first is that on that first drive, they had him do a lot more of the motions than they had, because Tyreek does the motions half the time. Yeah. But they had Mecole do them, and it kind of set him up to where it lulled him to sleep whenever they did the pop pass. I like to call it the jet sweep. Some people call it the pop pass. You call it whatever the heck you want. But at the end of the day,
Mecole calls it the flip pass. So,
well, I'm calling it the jet sweep. So,
I call it 6 points, son.
I mean, you can call it that too if it works that way. Otherwise, it's awkward if they don't score. Fair enough. I mean, but with the jet sweep part of it, you'd lulled him asleep with the motion. So that was actually smart play, because then when the time came, what's so smart about that is he's getting the ball at full speed by the time the defense cannot even react. And what they're really smart about is, since he was at full speed by the time he got the football, is they did it like a halfback draw in terms of blocking scheme, to where you kind of give a hi-hat read, let him go. And then you let the first wave, the defensive line, come down, because they don't matter anymore because he's at full speed. And you've got the entire Chiefs offensive line already at the second and third level. There's no chance at that point. So, I mean, just that was incredibly smart that they did it that way.
Le'Veon Bell only had 6 carries for 7 yards, had 3 catches for 31 yards. I think it seems like, I would expect over the course of the season, he settles into the 10 or 15, touches per game range. So I think it was clear that they got him in maybe a little bit earlier to try to get him involved, but the way the run game was setting up, it just didn't turn into the Le'Veon Bell game we kind of expected or thought it might.
Yeah, I think we all were hoping for a huge performance where you give him 30 touches no matter what way you had to, and just let him catch that pass and run in the end zone and throw that football at Adam Gase's poster that I purposely left there. Something like that. But, I mean, yeah, no, it wasn't an ideal day, and I'm sure he wishes he could have had more of an impact in the game and kind of been able to get after his teammates a little bit more. Although that was a little suspicious there when they tried to cut his legs at in that late hit at that one point. I thought that was a little, it was very Greg Williams-esque. So I don't know if Greg understands, if you're rude to us in this town, even though he may be from Excelsior, You're not going to be able to have your annual golf tournament here if you keep doing shenanigans like that against Chiefs players.
That's right. You're not going to bring your Lombardi trophy for photo ops at the golf tournament.
Because I've already taken that job with my replica.
So, all right. Hey, real quick, 21st career 300-yard game for Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, that's only the 23rd.
Right. So 54% – or sorry, 21. So 54% of his 39 career starts, he's thrown for at least 300.
I'm not going to lie. You threw a lot of numbers out there that just shut my – just put me in sleep mode.
I understand, and I'm going to throw more out. 18 of the 39 career games – he's thrown three or more touchdowns, so that's more than 46%. What I'm saying is Patrick Mahomes is insane and continues to be insane.
That's just what that guy does. I mean, I just marvel at it. Like today, like he did – I saw him do this in training camp a couple years ago, but the people kind of got to see it again today. That one pass to McColl, you know, when he's going towards the left sidelines and then, like, it was the third down that didn't convert. But, like, his momentum's taking him the complete opposite way, and he doesn't have to square up. He just moved his arm a little bit, changed the angle of it, and then just led McColl to try to be able to get the yak opportunity to convert the third down. Just stuff like that I'm just like, man, like, how does this guy do this? Like, I mean, he just makes stuff that shouldn't be humanly possible by physics and whatnot, and he just makes it look like it's, you know, it's a normal average Sunday.
And it was 35-9 Chiefs beat him up today. Beat up the new, you know, I mean, look, it's the Jets, but still did what they had to do. Let's talk a little bit about the defense on the other side of this break here.
Your home of the Chiefs, 41 Action News. The best seat to all the action. 7th Street Casino. Sunday Sound Off. An interactive sports show like no other. Answer questions. Voice your opinion. Try your hand against our panel of experts. Every Sunday night after the news and football. Get ready for game days right here with the most in-depth pregame coverage in town. Exclusive interviews, special guests, keys to the game. It's all on your home of the Chiefs. Countdown to kickoff. Live from Arrowhead. Sunday mornings at 10.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, I want to highlight one play when we talk about the defense, because I think there was a lot of angst. You know, the Jets scored field goals on their first three drives and were in position for a field goal on the fourth drive, you know, there in the first half. And so I think there's this feeling that the defense didn't play well. But if you remember, there was a pass, 27-yard pass to Denzel Mims down the right sideline. Charvarius Ward got his head around, but couldn't quite locate the ball. That was the only play the Jets had over 15 yards. That was the only explosive play the Jets had in the game. What did you make of the defense's performance? Because I thought, you know, first half, they didn't do a good job getting off the field in third and fourth down situations. But I thought overall, I mean, 5 of the 6 drives in the second half were 3 and outs. I thought overall, the defense did what I expected him to.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that it kind of surprised me when I looked after the game ended was how well they did on the edges against the run, and just how well they did against the run in general. I mean, they really stepped up this week, and I mean, you can say, oh, they're playing the Jets or this or that, but still at the end of the day, they're an NFL team that gets paid too. So, I mean, the fact that they held them to under 100 on 25 carries at 3.7 yards per carry. I mean, when you break that down though, and like you look at like the charts and everything, I'm like, oh wow, they actually did really well compared to the previous week against the Broncos, and they're getting gashed on that right side. So, in that regard, I was really impressed. And then, yeah, like you said, I mean, the thorn in their side really was those third down conversions. I mean, when they were able to convert on some of the short yardage and some of the passing plays that Darnold kind of bought some time. I mean, that was really the difference from that game, honestly, being a shutout.
Right. And I mean, here's the thing, like they had, they only gave up 229 yards in this game. Right. And even in the first half, when you're thinking, oh man, you know, the how did the Jets score three times? They averaged 4.6 yards a play. They only averaged 3.1 yards a play in the second half. I mean, like the defense did, you know, aside from just not getting off the field, they played well. And then it was clear. I thought it was clear to me in the second, I think Tyrann Mathieu took it a little personally because he made sure they were getting some three and outs in that second half with some big stops. And look, he's the leader on the defense. We've known that for a while, and he continued to show that today. But I mean, look, the Jets had two first downs in the second half. You know, and one of them came on the last drive after, you know, Henny and the Chiefs offense turned it over on downs. So really they had one first drive or one first down in the entire second half. I mean, that's an offense that averages 12 points a game. They scored 9 against the Chiefs. The Chiefs, to me, continue to show that, yes, they're not always great against the run, but they're still a better-than-average NFL defense.
Yeah, well, the one play that kind of cracked me up on Tyrann Mathieu there in the second half is there was a chance for an interception on one of the sideline routes, and he's just yelling at it. He's yelling at Juan Thornhill about not getting the pick, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, man.
Yeah, like, he's a perfectionist. It's hysterical in some respects.
Yeah, so I mean, it showed you that you had no question if he was invested in that game. So, I mean, when you have that type of leadership, that's going to be good to have because just they were constantly are somebody that continues to set the bar where it needs to be. You know, just like you and I try to do. You know, we try to set the bar really high.
Well, I set it low that way you can hurdle it. Consistently. I mean that's my plan every week here on More Than One.
Oh, on the podcast. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like what are you talking about?
So, Tershawn Wharton, Tank, whatever you want to call him. I mean, I think he's getting to the point where we're going to have to come up with a fitting nickname. Had the only sack of the game. Do you worry at all? This is, you know, the pass rush is not, I mean, we've seen them get some pressure, but we haven't seen them finish a lot. That was the case again this game. Although I think the Jets, the way they schemed it up, had a lot to do with it because they were running a lot of wide receiver screens, a lot of quick slants. And then, you know, Darnold was out scrambling, and he's a better scrambler than he gets credit for, I think. But at what point does that become a concern? Because we're halfway through the season now, and we're still talking about, like, you know, needing to get some to finish on the pass rush a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to the point now. I mean, coming into the game, I think they had 16 sacks, and they're going to need to start ramping it up here a little bit, especially come playoff time. They got to get that figured out. And in all honesty, I don't know if there's a solution on the roster right now at DN to be able to kind of counter what Frank Clark and Chris Jones bring to the table. Taco Charlton's good in spells. I mean, Passanio's not really giving you much there. Harris, that was inactive today after the struggles in run game yesterday. So. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. But I mean, yeah, man, they need to figure something out with that right defensive end spot opposite Frank Clark.
Yeah. And you know, one guy that I think, I know that sometimes he's the target of some consternation from fans. But you think back to the playoff game against the Titans on the fake punt, you think back to the interception return for a touchdown last week, then the forced fumble this week. Daniel Sorensen has a way of, even when he's not playing great, he puts something in the bucket every game. Today, it was 9 tackles, 8 solo, led the team, and got that big forced fumble. And look, they talked about it on the broadcast. I think Trent Green brought it up, that they just use Daniel Sorensen in so many ways. And Tyrann Mathieu talked about how smart he is and how he takes coaching so well. Are you impressed with the job that he's doing and the way he keeps finding ways to remain relevant on this defense?
Well, it's just you have to put him in positions to succeed, and the biggest way you do that is you let that guy come downhill, especially in run support or maybe covering a tight end or running back out of the flats or something of that nature. You make sure he's not the miss. You make sure he's in there instead of the mismatch you could have at linebacker in the passing offense and key down.
Yeah.
So he's that, and that's where that guy really excels. I mean, if you put him back there, he may athletically, he may not be able to turn and run deep and have the recovery speed. He's got to kind of be in the right spot, but man, if you put him inside that 10, let him come downhill. I mean, that guy's just, it's the perfect spot for him, and he's ferocious when they let him do that.
Yeah, and I mean, look, that the one time that the Jets got a first down, you know, in the second half, and maybe we're getting something going, he forces the fumble that Bashaud Breedlam recovers, you know, one or two plays later, and you know, chokes off any momentum that the Jets might have had, any thought that they had of staying relevant in that game was obliterated right there. So a big play, Dan, coming up, big play again. I know that people, I don't know if people understand how to judge an NFL defense, because I feel like if the defense isn't perfect and doesn't pitch a shutout, people like to complain. But the other team gets paid. They're going to make plays. You know, it's about, you know, how you adjust, how you counter that. And ultimately, at the end of the day, how many points you get, you know, and whether the other team is really competitive. And week in and week out, this defense, I think, demoralizes the other team and helps the Chiefs win football games.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And then, I mean, like, look at the Steelers. When they played the Ravens today, if I remember correctly, I think they'd given up by 100 rushing yards at halftime. And they're still undefeated right now. So, I mean, you know, there's different, like you and I have talked about, there's different ways to win, different ways to attack. And sometimes you got to lose the battle to win the war. So, I mean, the Chiefs are okay with that at times. Whatever's going to help them, quote unquote, run it back, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think if you're looking at some checkpoints about the Chiefs are playing an overmatched team and did they hit some of those checkpoints, they did. The glaring thing was the lack of a run game. You would have liked to see them impose their will on this team as well. But other than that, no real complaints. I do want to talk some about special teams. So, Nick, you mind sticking around and doing a C-block with me?
I don't know. I mean, I have some other things that I have to do. I got to go yogging or something like that. I believe it's a silent J.
All right. Well, so it'll just be me in the C block. But boy, we're going to have some fun. Don't go anywhere, kids.
Your home of the Chiefs, 41 Action News. The best seat to all the action. 7th Street Casino. Sunday Sound Off. An interactive sports show like no other. Answer questions. Voice your opinion. Try your hand against our panel of experts every Sunday night after the news and football. Get ready for game days right here with the most in-depth pregame coverage in town. Exclusive interviews, special guests, keys to the game. It's all on your home of the Chiefs. Countdown to kickoff. Live from Arrowhead. Sunday mornings at 10.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined as always by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, special teams played a big role in the win at Denver with Byron Pringle's 102-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. Special teams were big again. There was the blocked field goal at the end of the half, which I thought gave the Chiefs a lot of momentum, had to have them feeling good going to the locker room. But there was also Tommy Townsend, who I think was probably the second best. Was he the second or third best quarterback on the field today? Because obviously Pat was number one. And then does it go Henny Townsend or Townsend Henny with Darnold probably being fourth?
Henny had a little bit more accuracy on a couple of his throws.
Okay,
so Townsend's going to have to go for number three on that.
Okay. But still, that was a BB, man. Like, that was fun to see.
So, well, you want to know what's funny about that is the
punters are athletes too. Okay, that Nick, let's
not get reckless with our words right now. the thing I will say is it's smart to put it out there right now because, man, and come playoff time, teams are gonna have to prepare for that. There's going to be some crucial moments now that the Chiefs can sneak that out there, and there's Pringle at the gunner spot. And if they want to get real sneaky, they put Hardman at the other gunner spot. And then people are like, should we kind of do this or that now instead of maybe? Because the Townsend guy's got a little bit of an arm there.
Well, the other thing is Marcus Kemp on the other side is capable. You know, he's a receiver too, capable of making plays if you use him at the gunner. And,
the thing I'm getting at with that strategy-wise is if you see guys that are two legitimate wide receivers in your offense, that's going to send more of an alarm than having Kemp out there on a regular basis.
Right.
And you want them to think twice. When you're wanting, when you're wanting to surprise them, you put Kemp out there and you throw Kemp a pass.
Well, but the other thing was I saw some blowback about, you know, like, hey, why are you throwing that out there against the Jets? And
why are you calling my tweet out right now? I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I saw that on Twitter. And look, one, you want to show people that it's there. But two, you want to see how Tommy Townsend reacts in that situation. Right. You want to see whether he goes out there looking nervous, whether he's fumbling the ball around, whether he can execute the play. Because one, it gives teams something else to think about. But two, if it's AFC divisional game and it's late and you've got to have that play to pull out a surprise in a key moment, you don't want that to be the time Tommy Townsend tries to do it for the first time. I mean, in a low stakes game against the Jets that you don't need that play to win necessarily, that's a great time to say, hey kid, what can you do? And let him do it and then get all the accolades and get all the love, you know, and now next time that they call a play like that, he's going to trot out there with a lot of confidence.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you one bit.
So, one other thing before we wrap this up, Nick, trade deadline comes up on Tuesday. Obviously nothing else going on Tuesday of any note. So I'm sure that 41 Action News will have complete coverage of the NFL trade deadline. If I'm wrong about that, let me know. do you see the Chiefs making any moves? Do you think there are any moves out there to make? Do you think they were able to kidnap Quinnen Williams and force a fifth round pick down the Jets' throat and just keep him in Kansas City?
He left his bag with the equipment manager and just took a right instead of the team bus. And everybody's
like, Alan Wright just snatched right his shoulder pads.
Where's he at? Where's he at? He's not accounted for. I would say with the Chiefs, I mean, personally, I'm not expecting any moves to happen. I think they're going to stand pat with what they got. But I would not be against them finding a right defensive end to kind of match with Clark if there's a legitimate name out there that's on the market that they can figure out a way to financially work into the salary cap. That would be something that I would love to see. I'd love to see them find even more interior line offensive, you know, and help on offense. If they want to go after John Ross and bring even more speed to the offense, I would not be upset with that either. And then maybe if there's a quality tight end out there, I mean, like, you're only going to be able to make one move type of thing, I think, financially. It's just a matter of, if I'm ranking it, I think right defensive end would be one, interior O-line would kind of be two, and then you work your way down. There's a lot of options and a lot of opportunities to enhance this roster. It's just a matter of, I think right defensive end is kind of the biggest one that kind of solidifies some stuff for you if you can find the right player.
Yeah, and the Chiefs, according to Over the Cap, have a little more than about $5.4 million right in cap space. You need to keep a little bit because, you know, you need to have, you know, $250,000 here, $250,000 there in case you need to sign a guy off the streets, you know, when somebody goes down. Probably not going to be Jeff Allen, but I'm thinking of a Jeff Allen-type move where you're going to need, you know, $250,000, $300,000 for the last half of the season for maybe a couple of those. But you have $3 or $4 million to play with in terms of adding, you know, a player for the stretch drive if the right opportunity presents itself.
Right. I agree 100%. I'm not against them adding anybody if it's going to help this roster evolve into the run it back tour.
Right. I'm also not against them carrying over the $5 million to the cap next year. So
yeah, that is the added bonus if they do that, because they are certainly going to need it next year.
Yeah. That's a conversation for another day, Nick. I think we're pretty much done with this this whole Jets conversation, unless there's anything you want to add about the brilliance of Adam Gase.
I'm gonna miss watching this team play. I wish he could come back next week.
I feel like we need to have that Sarah McLachlan "I Will Remember You" song playing in the background, because I'm not sure we're gonna see Adam Gase in the NFL much longer.
That's what I've thought about a lot of coaches. Man, they always find a way to resurface. It might be in a completely different way, like a spread game analyst coordinator or something. But man, I'm telling you, dude, those guys always find a buddy somewhere in the league to go coach for.
Maybe,
Lane Kiffin still has a job somewhere out there. Lane Kiffin.
Okay? Well, but he's the head coach at the University of Mississippi. Gase may have to go back to that.
Well, but I'm saying that they're going to find a job somewhere. Like, that's
right, but I'm not sure it'll be in the NFL, given his track record with, you know, offenses and things.
Yeah, the guy's still going to collect checks for being terrible, man. Like, that's kind of the American dream in some regard. I mean, not really, but I mean, you know, it's just kind of one of the benefits.
Speaking of which, it was payday. I collected my check for being terrible, and I'm going to go buy a grill cover, I think.
I mean, it's just, you know. I kind of wonder sometimes if you were like, if you were thinking, you're like, gosh, I can't wait to be in my late 30s, early 40s, and, you know, just spend a Sunday excited about getting a grill cover.
Yeah, yeah, that's where I'm at, Nick. That's where I'm at. Thanks, 2020. All right. Anything else?
No, but I do. I know I say this a lot, man, but you just inspired a new t-shirt called Thanks 2020.
There you go. We got to start like the Cafe Press 2 or what, you know.
Oh, my goodness, man. We'd have t-shirts galore at this point just based on the podcast.
There you go. All right. I think that's it. I think we have wasted enough of the viewers' time since I tried to sign off earlier. So, Nick, I'll talk to you later this week, hopefully, about Panthers. How's that?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Take care, kids.